Hi, I'm Wendy Zuckerman, and you're listening to Shots of Science Verses. This is the show that pits facts against MDMA. And today we're finding out, how does this drug make you feel so good?
Hi, hello. How are you?
Joseph.
Good to meet you.
Joseph Palomar was a club kid in New York City in the late 90s and early 2000s. Reporter Heather Rogers and I went to chat to him in Manhattan.
My prime year was probably 2000. I mean, I never missed a week at Sound Factory except the week of 9/11 where clubs were shut down.
Oh, so you were there when Sandstorm came out.
I really remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
You have a very big smile on your face right now.
That was a good summer. But anyway...
And Joseph wasn't your likely club kid. When he finished high school, he was actually really square and wanted to be a cop.
I was ready to become a police officer here in New York City. I passed their physical and psychological. I just wasn't old enough yet to start.
While waiting to join the police force, Joseph discovered a world that he hadn't known before. Nightclubs and after-hours dance parties. And he remembers that MDMA was huge at the time.
You know, week after week, just people having the times of their lives on it. And people were there hugging, people making friends.
And that's exactly what MDMA can be like. You can feel like the best version of yourself, like the stresses of the world are out of your head. And all you want to do is fall in love with your friends, with the world, and just dance. So how is this drug doing all that? That is, what is happening inside our brains when we take MDMA? To find out, we asked a real party girl.
My name's Harriet DeWitt. I'm a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience at the University of Chicago.
Harriet first became interested in MDMA one day at a science conference when some researchers told her that they'd had life-changing experiences on the drug.
Yeah, a couple of colleagues, actually, and they were people that I didn't see as drug users at all.
And then was it then when you thought, I kind of want to study this more?
Yes, definitely.
So she dove in. She started reading all about MDMA. And what she learned is that the high that people can feel on this drug, it can feel a bit like taking speed. And that makes sense because chemically, MDMA is similar to amphetamines. In fact, MDMA stands for methylene dioxy methamphetamine. Get it? MDMA. But there's something different about MDMA.
It does something unique, and it produces a behavior that you don't see with any other drugs.
The unique thing that MDMA does is it makes you feel a real closeness with other people, like what Joseph felt like on the dance floor. And a wild and very cute image is that when you give MDMA to rats, it even helps them bond.
So it makes rats lie together side by side as though they were sort of bonding, as though they were sort of connected.
So Harriet's big question was, why does this happen? Well, you may know that MDMA can affect your serotonin levels. And one of the ways that it does this, it's really interesting. MDMA can latch onto this protein that normally removes serotonin from your brain. And so basically, without that protein hoovering up serotonin, it gets to stick around. And so this seems like a pretty clear-cut explanation for how MDMA works, right? I talked to Harriet about it.
The story that you hear is just, well, it's serotonin. Serotonin makes you happy. Put them together. It sounds like that's the feeling of being high.
It's a nice story, but... there's no way there's going to be just a little bump of one neurotransmitter that corresponds to feeling high or feeling good or feeling... I mean, it's just much more complicated than that.
So, for example, MDMA can affect other neurotransmitters like dopamine and norepinephrine, as well as this hormone that's linked to bonding called oxytocin. So Harriet told me about this one study that she did where...
the MDMA produced a very large increase in oxytocin.
But Harriet reckoned there must be even more to this story. So to unlock the mysteries of MDMA, much like the researchers before her, her next step was to score some. Heather Rogers and I asked Harriet about this.
And I guess, like, you find it through just researchers in the know.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like how you find it on the street.
No.
So where do you get it from?
There's one chemist who has now actually retired, and he produced a fairly large quantity of it that he has made available to researchers.
So now that Harriet had the goods, she got a bunch of participants, gave them a pill, and she wasn't shy about the dosage.
People compare it to something that they might get in a rave situation, and they wouldn't want more, put it that way.
In her first experiment with MDMA, which was published in 2009, Harriet gave 9 people the drug. And then she showed them pictures of faces with various emotional expressions, like a person smiling or someone frowning. And she repeated the experiment, but giving them a placebo. And what she saw is that when people were high, their brains had a stronger response to seeing happier faces. And curiously, their brains also weren't so affected by the angry pictures.
So it sort of makes them less able to detect negative emotions. So they're less responsive to angry faces.
One way that MDMA might be doing this is by dampening the activity in this part of the brain associated with fear, called the amygdala. And Harriet reckons that this superpower of MDMA, to make you care less about negative stuff around you, it's one of the things that makes this drug unique. You can feel good because you aren't distracted by what you think are negative expressions in your friends around you. And you can just enjoy your mates.
You can imagine if the people are at a party, then they're going to be less sensitive to kind of judgmental expressions or in a social situation, you're feeling a little bit like people are looking at you and people are judging you.
That is amazing.
It's kind of a mechanism or a process that we would never have thought of otherwise until we had done these studies.
And other research has come along showing similar things. And just this year, Harriet published a study where she gave MDMA or a placebo to 2 strangers and then got them to have a chat. And she found that MDMA
makes them feel that the conversation is more meaningful and that they feel more connected with the other person that they're talking to, and they like the other person that they're talking to.
And to Harriet, the fact that MDMA can do all of this opens up a lot of possibilities, like that MDMA could help you during therapy.
Well, if you think about it, if they're less responsive to negative emotions in other people, then to the extent that the therapist has some negative expression or the person perceives some negative expression in the therapist, if that's taken away, then the patient is more likely to be able to address negative things in their own lives or reveal more negative things.
And just a few years ago, Harriet wanted to know if maybe MDMA wasn't just affecting our brains, but maybe also our sense of touch. There'd been some research suggesting that when our oxytocin levels rise, it can make some types of touch feel nicer. And Harriet knew that MDMA bumps up our oxytocin levels. So she got people into her lab, gave them MDMA or other stuff like a placebo. And then a colleague grabbed a soft brush made of goat's hair and slowly stroked their skin.
It's kind of a consistent rate, the kind of rate that you might pat your dog or that you might stroke someone if you're calming them.
Interesting. Were you involved in the study? Did you put yourself up to be a guinea pig?
I should have. No, I didn't. Good idea.
Would have been so nice, the goat hair, soft goat hair.
It would have been, yeah.
And she found that it was nice. In fact, people on MDMA said that soft touch was nicer on average than the people who were on a placebo. But something happened in that experiment that really freaked Harriet out. So these participants are coming in, getting MDMA and filling out forms, saying how pleasant it all is. And this was going on as expected until this one guy.
This was a regular participant in that study. And at the bottom of his form, he said, in capital letters, he said, "Now I know what I have to do."
Yeah, he wrote, quote, "This experience helped me sort out a debilitating personal issue. Google my name. I now know what I need to do." And Harriet was like, "What? Google my name?
So we did that. And it turns out he was the leader of a white supremacist group in Illinois.
Yeah. So Harriet had just given a powerful drug to a guy who headed up a notorious white supremacist group. And he just left her a note saying, "I now know what I need to do."
So that made me really worried. You know, I was alarmed by it, I have to say.
So what did you think?
Well, I thought he'd have to, if he's already got these beliefs, racist beliefs, he might think that he has to go and, I don't know, shoot someone. You know, the drug somehow had made him angrier. So I sent the research assistant in there to ask the subject a little bit more. And
he was still, so the subject was still in the lab at that point.
He's in the room, yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh gosh, so it was like happening in real time.
It was in real time. So the research assistant went in there and said, you know, what did you actually mean there? And how are you feeling? And the guy said, "I realized that what's really important is love."
Love. After getting a single dose of MDMA, he said he felt a transformation and that, quote, "love is the most important thing."
So this is somebody, he reported that he sort of had gotten his values wrong and that there are things that are more important in his life than worrying about what race people are or whether immigrants are coming in. That's not something to focus on. Focus on something that's important, like your connection with other people. And he said it really did change his life.
Harriet wrote this up in a case report.
This story made headlines around the world.
I know.
MDMA pill completely rehabilitates a Charlottesville white supremacist leader.
Harriet DeWitt, who led this whole research, said this. "It's what everyone says about this damn drug, that it makes people feel love."
Did you really say damn, Harriet?
Probably.
And have there been other cases? I mean, so many people who have racist views must have taken MDMA and not had a complete transformation.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why did he experience love and other people who use the drug don't.
Do you think maybe it was the goat hair that did it? The lovely soft goat hair.
There you go. There you go. Could have been.
And Harriet told me that this guy wasn't completely cured. He did have some racist and anti-Semitic thoughts. But still, in the future, she wants to do a study where she gets people into her lab with different political views and gets them to take MDMA to see if perhaps conversations go a little smoother. But no matter what, it doesn't look like MDMA is some anti-racist cure-all. So our next question is, what can MDMA cure? Because researchers are looking to see if MDMA can help with all kinds of things, from different kinds of anxiety to alcohol use disorder. But the best evidence that we have comes from research on post-traumatic stress disorder. So let me tell you about this one study that was published just a few months ago. About 100 people with PTSD were split into two groups, half given MDMA, the other a placebo. And they take the drug or a placebo and then talk to a therapist for a session that lasted 8 hours. I talked to Harriet about this.
For eight hours. Oh my gosh.
I know.
So long to talk to a therapist, but I guess that's what the MDMA helps with.
They did this once a month for 3 months. And after all that, on average, both groups had fewer PTSD symptoms as measured by this questionnaire. But Team MDMA were doing better. In fact, around 4 months after the whole experiment began, almost half of the people who got MDMA had improved so much that they were considered in remission. That was compared to around 20% in the placebo group.
So in a therapy situation, and the patients with PTSD are having to face very negative things about themselves, often shame and often terrible things that they've had to do or that they've witnessed. So those are very negative thoughts. And so there's a possibility that the drug makes them better able to, that suppresses some of those negative feelings and self-judgments.
Now, of course, not everyone had a huge improvement here. But like we mentioned, the results of these kinds of trials are so promising that over in Australia, certain psychiatrists can now prescribe MDMA for PTSD. And from what we know from animal research and human clinical trials, MDMA isn't very addictive. So all of this is making this drug sound pretty good, like great even. But is MDMA really all love and soft touches from goat hair brushes?
I don't know why she takes it. She always gets so depressed coming down.
Because growing up, this was the message that I kept hearing.
I didn't know how many health problems it could cause.
You just wanted to try something new.
Ecstasy. You don't know what it'll do to you.
To find out more, head over to our full episode on MDMA. Because what you're listening to now, it's just shots of Science Versus. It's just a little bit of this MDMA episode. So if you want to find out everything that you need to know about MDMA, just search for Science Versus on whatever podcast app you're using. Search for Science Versus, that's Science VS, and click on our episode, MDMA, Can Ecstasy Cure Your Agony? I'm Wendy Zuckerman. Fact you next time.